Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Easter is a day of hope and a season of hope. It's a reaffirmation of our belief, not just as Christians, but as Americans, that better days are always ahead of us.
These women that claim to be feminists are so upset with the Huffington Post for daring to publish a woman's opinion.
They should ask those people to report the news in a balanced and accurate fashion, the way they're supposed to, not under the doctrines of the Bible. Under the doctrines of journalism.
It's all from this idea that God keeps his distance from us, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Hello. I want to say that foreigners with English as a second language also love issues, etc. Bye.
It is something that maybe the last 2 weeks have woken us up on this. Taking for granted that people understand the liberties under which we live, the liberties that were framed together, really recognized by the framers of our Constitution. And there's a reason why in the Bill of Rights, one of the first liberties articulated is the freedom of religion, a freedom to believe, not just to worship, but to believe and act accordingly, to frame one's whole life by a system of beliefs, whatever they may be. Why did the framers believe this to be so fundamental to the American experiment, and to the future of all the other liberties? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 9th of April. Dr. Russell Moore joins us to talk about religious liberty. He wants to talk about religious liberty with more than just me, with you and all of us. And a little bit later, Pastor David Peterson will join us. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the historic lectionary, getting right into Jesus appearing to his disciples on the evening of Easter, and then the Valley of Dry Bones in Ezekiel chapter 37. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. And our beloved on-demand listeners, use that Issues Etc. comment line whenever and wherever you listen, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about religious liberty, Dr. Russell Moore. He's a regular guest, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. He's author of several books, including a forthcoming publication, Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel. He's also co-signer of a recent statement titled, Now is the Time to Talk About Religious Liberty. Dr. Moore, welcome back.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Moore, I applaud you and the other co-signers of this statement for trying to start the conversation, but what I wonder, and what I wondered when I first read it, right around Easter, was, has the American public retained the ability to think like the framers thought about religious liberty?
Well, we're going to have to hope so, at least in terms of the potential, or else we're not able to have a democratic republic, because a democratic republic presupposes people who are able to think about why our first freedoms matter. I think the problem that we have right now is that there are many Americans who just don't understand religious motivation at all. And so they assume that when people have religious convictions, that these must really be about other motivations, mostly for power or for money. So when, for instance, the Little Sisters of the Poor say they don't want to purchase abortion-causing drugs through their insurance plan, then many would assume, well, it must really be about saving money on insurance. And when someone says, you know, I can sell flowers to a gay couple, but I can't use my creative gifts in being part of a same-sex wedding, well, it must really be about the fact that she just is trying to achieve some political agenda. So there's a lack of understanding about what it means for people to believe that they're going to give an account for their lives and for their actions.
So in other words, the assumption on that side of the argument is that people are bigots. Some people are bigots, and they just hide behind religious sentiment in order to justify their bigotry.
Yeah, and there's always been that strain American life. So, for instance, people who would say, well, these Mennonites who don't want to go to war are really just cowards. Or these Jehovah's Witnesses who don't want to salute the flag, they're really communists. But we've had a system in place that has said, no, we need to honor religious conscience, because if we don't, we're going to not only be betraying the principles handed down to us by Madison and Jefferson, but we're also going to be creating a situation that is going to be ultimately dangerous for everyone and for everyone's conscience. And that's not the sort of country that we want to live in. Now we're in a very different arena, and one that is dangerous. And it's not just dangerous for evangelical Christians like me, or for Roman Catholics or other religious people. It's dangerous for everybody, because if you don't have a sense of the state being limited by that ultimate sense of conscience, then the state can do anything. And that's going to be a problem for secular progressives and for libertarians and for everybody else.
You referred to religious liberty as among our first freedoms, and I'm certain there's more in that statement than simply it's listed among the first freedoms. What argument would you make kind of to a general public that religious freedom, along with several others, are of a greater caliber than other freedoms? Not to diminish the other freedoms, but they are of a caliber mm-hmm. such that these other freedoms depend upon them first.
Well, because again, if you have a state that can force people to act contrary to conscience, then you have a state that can do the most ultimate damage to someone that can be done. If a person is not able to live out his life according to his conscience, then that's a person who cannot live in dignity. And that's a state that is ultimately unlimited. And then it also takes away the motivating factors, the deepest motivating factors that people can have in the public, and all that leaves us with is economic self-interest or fealty to the state. And either of those two things, once they're unhinged from any sense of conscience, lead in terrible directions that we don't want to go.
I'm curious what you make of a statement made recently in the New York Times op-ed piece by Frank Bruni, where he actually quoting someone else but agreeing heartily with the person he was quoting, said that religious leaders, in particular church leaders, I think he meant Christian leaders in the United States, need to be made to take homosexuality off the sin list, his words. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it is a sad display of ignorance, because if anyone in the room reading that op-ed had had even the basic understanding of religion at all, someone would have said, we can't run this article without looking ridiculous. Not only without looking fascist, which they did, but without looking ridiculous. I mean, the idea that religions, forget Christianity for a moment, just the world religions themselves, can just be nudged and altered along by the power of the state over something as central as the question of what does it mean to be righteous before God or unrighteous before God is an astoundingly stupid statement, as well as an astoundingly arrogant one. But it tells us where we are right now. In some places in the country where even saying that, putting it into print, is not held in check.
To me, it is not a very big leap to go from church leaders must be made to take homosexuality off the list to churches must be made to serve the purpose of the state. And if the purpose of the state is deemed to be a kind of pluralistic society that does not permit dissent on the issue of marriage or homosexuality, then that's the purpose they're going to have to serve. What are your thoughts?
Well, again, you have two assumptions here. One of the assumptions is that the state is the highest value. The other assumption is that churches are just community organizations like any other community organization. So if you take that first assumption, the state is ultimate, and then the church is a community organization, and the community organizations take dictation from the state, then that's ultimately where you're going to go. The churches need to get in line with where the state has decided to go, or the churches need to be plowed out of the way.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of the pluralistic society. I think the popular misconception is that those who are advocating for religious liberty in the current context don't want a pluralistic society. But I would argue that's precisely what we want. We want the most pluralistic possible society. Speak to that issue.
Well, that's exactly right. That's why I'm a Baptist, and my Baptist ancestors were agitating for a First Amendment at the founding of this country, and for two reasons. One, to stop the establishment of a religion, because a state-established religion brings with it the priorities of the state. It doesn't bring the power of the Spirit. But also to allow for free exercise. And so what we're calling for is not an end to pluralism, but the beginning of pluralism, where we have the freedom to seek to persuade one another in the public square. That's what we're missing right now.
The First Amendment, of course, doesn't only include religion. It also includes speech and assembly and the right to petition government for redress of grievances. If one of those falls, does all of them fall?
Ultimately, yes, because you have no rationale for the other. And we're thinking about, for instance, freedom of the press. Right now, we have people saying, "Well, we can't have freedom of religion for groups of people, for corporations. We can only have freedom of religion for individuals." Well, if we take that attitude toward the press, individual reporters can have freedom, but news organizations such as CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post cannot have freedom of press, because these aren't individuals. How can they have freedom of press? They're corporations. Then the whole idea is nonsensical, and that's dangerous.
Finally, then, Dr. Moore, when you propose that we begin a conversation about religious freedom, first of all, realistically, how do you anticipate it would go? But how does it begin?
Well, it begins with people who are willing to try to set precedents, which is why, for instance, the Apostle Paul doesn't just quietly get out of Philippi when the magistrates say, you know, "We've beaten you against the law, just go on and get out of here." He says, "No, we're going to do this publicly." It's why he appeals all the way up to Agrippa in order to make his case and to set precedent for the future. We have to do the same thing. And as we're doing it, talking and articulating about why religious liberty is not just a matter of self-protection, it's not. It's a matter of the common good, which means that we have to be not only looking out for violations on our religious liberty, but everyone else's religious liberty. If your Muslim neighbor is mosque is being zoned out of existence because it's a mosque, then I don't have to agree with Islam in order to say that's a state that has too much power. And I think the way that we confront Islam is not by giving the government the sword in order to persecute it, but in order to evangelize through persuasion and not through coercion. So we need to be looking out for religious liberty for everybody around us.
Dr. Russell Moore is president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention, author of several books, including a forthcoming publication, Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel. And he's co-signer of a recent statement titled, "Now is the Time to Talk About Religious Liberty." You can read it at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Moore, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, it's going to be Pastor David Peterson with us, and we're going to spend the rest of this hour, and a little bit actually, past the rest of this hour on this Thursday afternoon, looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the historic lectionary. That will take us not first, but eventually into John chapter 20. But we're going to begin with one of the small pieces of Sunday morning, the antiphon to the intro. It's a little verse that comes before the intro. It, like newborn babes, crave pure spiritual milk, from 1 Peter chapter 2, from which this coming Sunday gets its name. All of that right after this.
Why do you think the way you do? And what about your friends, your neighbors, your church? Is it because of what the scriptures say, or is it because they only think what the world has told them to think?
Pastor Jonathan Fisk talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
making the case for the church's response to postmodernism will be a crash course in the who's who of the postmodern pagan mindset, with a hard-hitting look at both the assumptions of the American pop culture world and the rarely mentioned but catastrophic effects that may not yet affect you, but will certainly affect your children.
You can meet and hear Pastor Jonathan Fisk making the case for the church's response to postmodernism June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 400. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.